Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. How are you, brains? You're back at your favorite spot, the location, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dumb. Today, we are with Ann Sommer. She's using 26 years of medicine experience in and out of the operating room, also studying human behavior, evaluating what makes us tick. She has a Master of Science in Health Sciences. She's also a contributor in an anthology with the great Jack Canfield, Success Redefined. She's coaching now. We're going to talk to her about that and a whole lot more. Let's welcome her to the show. How are you, Ann?
Hi, April. Hi, brains. I'm great. I'm great.
You're looking like brand new money. Yes, you are. I love that. And that necklace is speaking volumes. It's putting off a lot of energy. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I saw you very high profile with Jack Canfield hanging out a few weeks ago. How'd that feel?
Oh, so good. April, so good. You know, Mr. Jack Canfield, who you should know. Everybody should know who Jack Canfield is, just like everybody should know who April Mahoney is. You brains. So the book came out in February of 2024, and I had met Jack on Zoom. I'd never met him in person. So just last week, I just got back from Beverly Hills, where we had a conference with the publishing company, and I met him. Got to talk to him, got to sit next to him in just a cocktail party and talk normal, just normal, you know. You forget that people like Jack Canfield and Lise Nichols and Oprah Winfrey and April Mahoney and Ann Sommer are just normal people. We're just normal people.
You do. You know, and then when you sit in there, I was just, we just lost James Earl Jones. Oh. And I saw him at the Comedy Store. He sat right in front of me. And I said, "Are you James Earl Jones?" And he shook his head, "No, no, no," because he knew if he opened his mouth, I was going to identify that voice. And I said, "You too are Mufasa." And he started to laugh. He couldn't help it, you know. So when you see them in person and they have a texture and they have a feeling that really resonates with you, you know that they are just regular old human beings with extraordinary gifts. Tell us a little bit about your gifts and how you show up in the world, Anne.
Oh, my gifts are, you know, I was born here in Wisconsin, where I now reside again in my hometown. And we grew up dairy farming, milking cows, baling hay, picking rocks. And I was the fourth of fifth. And I joke that like one of these things doesn't fit with the other. One of these things doesn't belong. I was that one thing. I was blonde, curly haired, shy, reserved. You said my name, my face would blush. I was very small in that sense of don't look at me, don't talk to me. I was scared of everything to include air and people, I think, April. Mm-hmm. So as I, you know, grew up, when I got into my late teens, early 20s, I really thought it's so hard being this shy and this reserved and this insecure in a sense, right? And I decided I was just going to change, that I was going to self-evolve. And I just figured out how to watch people. Like, I'm going to watch April interview people and see, how does she talk? What does she do with her hands? What does she do with her face? How does she respond? And that's how I started my own self-evolution. So now I joke I'm an overcorrected outgoing adult. And that's how I show up.
That's cute. That's really cute. Overcorrected. Thank you. I love that.
Thank you. And, you know, really through my life of making mistakes, we all make mistakes. I just, I learned everything one of three ways: the wrong way, the hard way, or through my friends. So now, like, I know who I am. I'm super secure. I figure out how to erase the negative talk, and I just show up as me. I bring my energy, I bring myself, I bring my spirit, I bring who I was made through God, and I get out of my own head. When I walk into a room, I don't let the words take control. And that's what I teach
You
people
don't
to do
overthink it.
now.
And that's what a lot of people do. They overthink the process, the conversation. And that's what I'm really disciplining myself on. I'm trying to base it on strictly on the facts. If you look at the entire world, it's someone else's perception. It's what someone else is pouring into you. It's what someone is constantly reiterating. And we never take the time to say, you know what? Let me edit and filter this. Does this really make sense? Does this really apply? Do I know right from wrong? You know, all these things are critical when making an informed decision. Tell us a little bit about your work in the operating room. What got you into medicine?
Oh my goodness. What did get me into medicine? A chance meeting. So when I was little, none of us went to college. Like, my parents didn't go to college. They ran a very successful business as entrepreneurs and dairy farmers, but they didn't really teach us, like, we're business people. Here's how you do a business. It was when I left. Just by chance, my older sister joined the Air Force, called me. She's like, "Hey, do you want to be my nanny?" And she lived in Spain, April. So I flew over there at like 18, 19 to take care of a 2-month-old baby in the middle of a goat field. And that's really like where I found myself for sure. But I met a physician assistant because my sister ran their dental clinic, and that was hooked up to the Air Force hospital. And this one guy and I were talking, and he's like, "Hey, I'm a PA." And I was like, "What's a PA?" And he's like, "It's a physician assistant. I'm a medical provider." And there was a voice right here, which I call God's voice. And it said, "That's what you're meant to be." I remember turning around, April, like, "Who said that?" And I was like, "Okay, that's what I meant to be." That is how I 100% knew I was doing the right thing. And I never doubted it. I mean, it wasn't an easy path to get into college and pay for college and ride my brother's 10-speed bike in Madison, Wisconsin in the winter, and work nights and weekends to pay my bills as a CNA, a nursing assistant. And then I made a plan with myself that I couldn't use my work money to have fun with. So I discovered I could sell my plasma. So I would sell my plasma twice a week. And I always had money in my bank, in my wallet.
Now that's on many different levels, you know, not just the fact that you did it, but what you went through, the sacrifice, but also the gift of life. And so I thank you for that. To
You're
be able
welcome.
to do that twice a week too. That's, you know, it's not for chumps. So you have went from the dairy farms of Wisconsin to a goat farm in Spain to Beverly Hills. Tell us what you're doing right now.
Oh, I am just. Let's talk about Beverly Hills. I want to talk about Beverly Hills.
I'm from Los Angeles, so, and not too far. My parents live not too far from Beverly Hills. It is quite the extravaganza.
It is. We end. I was able to stay at the Beverly Hills Hilton, like
Oh
the
my goodness.
iconic Hilton. Yes, where red carpet events, where unfortunately Whitney Houston, and passed into heaven, like iconic. And I just want to say that it was iconic. Like, I was grateful. I had fun. I met so many wonderful people. The event was magnificent. I showed up as myself, unapologetic, just so good. But the last night, April, after we had a red carpet, because behind me are my two awards that one is for being a best-selling author and one is for being on the show with Lisa Nichols. And so it's a recognition of your accomplishments. And so after 3 days of being in heels and dressing up, which I love to do, but my feet were like, "Girl, sit down." But I went up to my room to change, and I thought, "I'll go back and I'll hang out with some of the new people I met." But then the other part of me was like, "I don't want to. I really want to just like soak in this moment that I am in the Beverly Hills Hilton." So I took a bubble bath. like a child. And I just laid in that bathtub and I was like,
Right.
I am in the Beverly Hills Hilton Hotel taking a bubble bath.
Wow.
Like just that moment of, I'm in the Beverly Hills Hilton taking a bubble bath. It was
It's
great.
that moment of bliss and appreciation. You know, I had a meltdown the other day. I went and got a facial.
Yes.
And I laid there on the table and I started to cry. And the esthetician said, am I hurting you? What's wrong? You know, and much like you, Anne, I took it all in. I looked at, I could come to my home and I could have anything from a tuna fish sandwich to a filet mignon. I could have any cocktail I want. I can go in my backyard and get in a jacuzzi. I could go in my bathroom, be washed by a bidet. I could go outside and get a brand new car. Looked on my finger, I had a big diamond. And I just thought about it. It's 107 degrees here in San Diego. And when I came back, I saw people sleeping on the street
Yeah.
in that heat. No shelter, no food, no self-esteem, no one to care about them. It was mind-blowing. So I understand exactly what you're saying when you say immerse yourself in that moment. Love
Yeah.
that moment because it's a first world problem.
Yes.
And we're sitting here worried about all this political kerfuffle that's, you know, that's going on, women's ability to be treated equal or to make a choice about their own bodies, our children going to school, afraid if they're going to get shot. You know, there's a lot of things that are distracting us. When
Yeah.
you work with your coaching students, how do you keep them focused and keep them happy and in the moment?
Yeah. Because I can meet them where they're at. I can meet them where they're at. And what you just listed off, April, is so important as far as where we were and where we are now. And what was that path? And the ability to meet somebody and say, like, I know, I get you. I get where you're at. And even if I haven't had their pain or their experiences or their trauma, I don't have to. I can just have this, I have this beautiful, when you say, what are my gifts? At this point, my gifts are, I can see what people aren't showing me. I can hear what they're not telling me. And I know what questions to ask. And I can collect all of their static and keep asking the questions and mold it and like give it back to them in a very edible, easy to digest explanation. And explain to them like why all these things happened to them. And from there, that whole process really, it does erase the inner critic. It erases their whatever words are running through their head. So the important part is, you know, listening. So many people don't know how to listen and just
They don't.
shut up.
It's a different skill set than hearing. It's
Yes.
a totally different skill set. And what you just said, if I can encapsulate it, you're holding space.
Yeah.
You're holding a safe space, a safe container for them to pour in what they need. Sit there and process it. You know, it doesn't have to be a whole lot of conversation at first. People want to jaw jack. They want to, you know, they want to talk either to hear themselves talk or to be the smartest person in the room, but to be able to just be silent and embrace what someone else is saying. And also run that through your mind, you know, try to figure out, you know, am I posturing and pontificating or is this really valuable? Is someone just says something that really makes sense that resonates with me?
Right.
And it's difficult. It, you know, it's difficult, but you're working with great people. You also had a great contribution into the Success Redefined. Tell us a little bit about your contribution to that anthology.
Yeah. So, for those of you that don't know, Jack Canfield has come up with the Success Principles, and it's 46, 47, I believe. It's probably up to 90 some principles now, but it's the path of how to be successful, how to get anything you want, and how to switch your body and your mind and all of this great stuff. So this is the sequel called Success Redefined. And he wrote obviously the first chapter, and then there's multiple authors, which is what the anthology is. The premise was, once I got accepted as an author, April, they wanted me to write something about an event that I was successful, something I overcame, something that changed me. And so when I told my agent the name of my title, he was like, "You are not going to write that." I was like, "I am going to write that." And he was like, "I don't think anybody's ever come up with a title like that." And I was like, "Well, it's about time." Now, the title is a little shocking, even to my siblings. And I said, but you have to read the story to understand the title. Because if all you read is the title, then you've missed the whole story and lesson. Again, listening, right? Listening, reading,
Absolutely.
Comprehending. So, do you want to know the title?
Of course. How I Fired My Mom. Really? All right. Well, you have to give us a little bit more than that. That's what they call clickbait.
Yes. Open loop clickbait. All right. Let's see. You want me to read a little bit from here?
Absolutely.
Okay. Like my mom and dad, and they were married almost 60 years before my dad died at almost 85. They were German, so love was shared with a nice warm home, clothes, and homemade meals always eaten as a family. There were no, "I love you, great job, you're awesome." No hugs, no kisses, never. Dad showed love with work, teaching, yelling, and bad instructions. And we learned how to start and finish large farm jobs. When I was around age 10, up on a huge John Deere farm tractor, because only John Deere was worthy to my father, the tractor engine was always running and very, very loud. His instructions to us went like this. He would start rambling off words or instructions about how to drive and operate the mechanics of the tractor. And at the same time, he would fly his right hand rapidly in movements that meant something very clear to him. But his large hand would go from one lever to the foot pedal to "don't do this," and then he would run away. He was gone. And this is how Dad gave us major instructions throughout our childhood. But what we learned quickly was the act of asking more questions, which meant don't ask, because the instructions did not change or elaborate, except with the ending from Dad of "got it." And then he was gone again. And my little head learned the reply, "Okay, figure it out, don't mess up, and use your common sense God gave you." And by mess up, I mean do not beepity beep up. Now, Mom was sweet and salty. In addition to working the farm with Dad, she cooked, baked, canned everything for winter, decorated, sewed, led groups of kids in 4-H in her family. And her biggest gift to me was teaching me to sew. She was patient, clear, and I loved everything about her time sewing. I love listening to how material has a grain, how to fold it, pin patterns correctly, and cut and fold the directions to meticulously construct articles of clothing or accessories. Me and sewing bonded, and as I aged and mastered sewing, I was able to go solo, review a pattern, the instructions, and figure out shortcuts of efficiency. This was my outgoing personality soaring in a quiet setting. Advice from Dad. He gave me advice in a yes or no format. He listened to my question and answered in a way that led me to a swift conclusion. Advice from my mom. She gave me a lot of words that felt like I was in a cyclone sentence, grasping for a period and a conclusion, which I never seemed to get. We spoke different languages, but used the same words.
That's beautiful, because there is a contradiction there, one and the other. You know, and I talk about that often in interviews that I have from my stepfather and my mother. You know, about money. He was very, very frugal. She was very, very thrifty. I mean, you know, she just made money seem like it grew on trees. But with that, driving down your own lane, how did that give you a sense of balance as you got older? What did you pull from the both of them, the best?
Yes. You know, the best part of growing up manual labor is one, my parents didn't ask us to do anything they weren't doing with us. So when we were baling hay on the hottest day of the year and we're all in jeans and long sleeve shirts and leather gloves, we made a little family line because we had to work as a team. And it didn't matter if I was 10 and my oldest sibling was 16, the expectation was I moved as fast as she and he did. So there was no like, oh, you're the baby. It's like, move faster, throw the bale better, you know, and mom and dad were always there working with us. So I will say that growing up like that, there is no job harder than what I did as a child. No job harder than farming. Zero. Like those
I can
manual
imagine.
labor, farming, agriculture, they get an A plus 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 plus. Because there's danger too. You know, people lost their lives getting pulled into machines or their limbs, or there was
Or being out in the cotton
always.
picking sun. I did that one time. I said, I'm going to go out and pick vegetables with the migrant workers here in Imperial Valley. Well, they had a system. They had a little radio with mariachi music strapped to the one guy's back. And they had like a little dance that they would do. I'm a city girl. I knew nothing about asparagus. They picked asparagus one at a time. I thought it was in a bushel or something. Come on, mija. Come on. Andale, andale. I was like, you know, it's hot out there. But people need to, again, like you said, give them credit because that is where our nourishment comes from.
Yes.
That is,
Yeah.
there's nothing better than cultivating the soil. You're grounded. You are with Mother Earth. It teaches you. When you're out there at night and you're looking up under the stars, when you are there weeding, when you are planting the seed, when you see the first harvest come, you know, you are really doing that. And much like life, you're planting seeds, you're working people's soil, which is their soul. You're helping them cultivate and spring up. So you are still doing great work. And I thank you for that. Let's ask you some
Thank
fun
you.
questions real quick, because this is my favorite part of the interview. If you
Okay.
were an appliance and in the kitchen, what appliance would you be, girl?
Blender.
The blend. I get more blenders. Everybody wants to mix it up. Why would you be the blender?
I'm a blender because there's different levels of blending and there's different techniques. You know, there's like slow, there's mix, there's chop, there's shake it up, and then whatever is thrown into my bucket, I know how to mix it or chop it or produce something that when I give it back to you is better than the way I got it.
Wow, that's beautiful. I'm the refrigerator. I'm just the
Oh.
place where you chill. That's
Ooh.
me. I'm just the refrigerator all day long, especially in this hot weather. If you could time travel, if you
Yeah.
could go back to the past, if you could stay here in the present or project to the future, where would you land?
Where would I land? Would I have to live my life from the point if I go back, do I have to live my life all over again, or do I get it?
No conditions,
Time
no
travel.
rules, no boundaries. We're just where do you want to go? What do you want to do? You want to be back in the Beverly Hills Hotel in that bubble
Right. I just want a bubble bath. Just I want a bubble bath. I would love to go probably 150 years into the future because I'm curious what really happens to our Earth and our populations and our people. I would
going to be a
love to see,
transformation.
yeah. Do we get it right? Like, do we get it right, or do we continue to get it
It's
wrong?
gonna, you know, in my mind, my meditation, my thought process, it's gonna be a whole nother scene because now it's starting to evolve. You're seeing, I don't know what people's religious doctrine in, but if you read the book of Revelation, it tells you. You know, you look at young people now and they don't even want to be male or female. They're non-binary. How does that work? I don't understand that. You see the wars, you see the climate change, you see the food is genetically modified. You know,
Yeah.
everything is changing. We are at 5G. We are going into the next dimension. And I believe that COVID was a precursor to that. It was a way to pause, edit, catch our breath before we go to this next cycle. So I'm with you. I'm ready to project to the future. I really want to see what is it going to be at artificial intelligence. I mean, yeah. You deal with that in the medical thing. Now there's no need for you to necessarily have the instruments and all that. It's done by robotics. You just need to be there to supervise or take care of the person when they come out of the anesthesia. Mm. The whole dynamic is changing, but it's
well,
going
so
fast.
That's not absolutely correct because I did do robotics. I know I am robotically trained. So when we say robotic laparoscopy, it just means advanced laparoscopic or minimally invasive surgery. But you absolutely have to have the surgeon and the first assistant, the first, and changing instruments and making sure everything is going great. You will always need humans to operate, I think. Well, so the assistance of robotics is advanced, but you still need humans to operate at this point anyway.
Well, we need humans to operate on all kinds of levels. Yeah. If you were a car, what kind of car would you be?
One with an engine that runs every day.
That was made by John Deere. Huh?
I wish my daughter was here. She knows cars up, down, left, right. I would say I would be my Lincoln Navigator. And I'm going to say that because I love that car. And my daughter one day, she's like, Mom, do you think you're better than other people driving this car? And I said, no, absolutely not. Because that's not why I drive it. I drive it because I love it. I love it. It has nothing to do with anyone else. And I treat it like a truck. I mean, sometimes I have insulation stuffed in there. Sometimes I've got wood in there, but I always clean it. No matter what I do, I use it like a truck. I fill it with people. I fill it with products. I fill it with whatever. So it's not a thing that I own. And I'm like, look, I have a Navigator. I'm like, awesome. I have a Navigator. It's an extended length. I can pack it full of anything that I need and I can clean it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What would you be? What kind of car would you be?
I would be a 1974 VW van. Oh, yes, honey, with the flowers on it and a hookah pipe in the back, playing some Jimi Hendrix with my big, fine black man in there with an afro. Oh, yes, I got it all there. I don't need anything fancy dancing. I need something relaxed with a good vibe, but I could chill and just be out at the beach and just love life.
I want that. I want to be your, I can I be like your, you know, they always have a cool pet in there, like one of those little jumping spiders or a cool
absolutely
chameleon.
absolutely
I just want to be the pet. And
absolutely, you can be my pet. You can be my pet.
I love that.
Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, how to purchase a copy of the book, and how to coach with you.
Yes, brains. I love all brains. Love brains. So go to my website, which is annsummer.org, annsommer.org, and or paannsummer.com. And you can connect with me on there. And I do coaching. I erase people's inner critic, redefine who you are, show you who you are. And I help people take their ideas, make an offer, and scale their businesses so they have work-life balance. So we're not working more, working smarter with a better system so you can have 6 to 7 figure days.
It's all about working smarter, brain. It's not harder. Use your brain. Use some artificial intelligence. Use some robotics. Make it minimally evasive. You don't have to go deep. You just got to go to the right place and be able to do a 360. Thank you so much, Anne, for being here with us on The Edge. You are a winner. I wish you much success. I'm so proud of you and your awards and all your accomplishments and the selfless work that you do in medicine. Thank you, Queen.
Thank you, April. This was so fun. Love those glasses. Mm-hmm. I am going to be looking for you on a beach with your hot guy, hot van, hot sand.
I'm a pull over. I'm a park right next to your Lincoln Navigator.
I'm going to have the April Mahoney on the back.
Absolutely. Brains, go in, love, like, share, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can find us all over the planet. There's over 2,000 episodes, great innovators, implementers, influencers, and impactors like Ann. Check it out. Thank you, Ann. Have a good day.
Bye, Brains. Bye, April. Thank you. I look forward to meeting all of you.